Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us. This is Hashtag No Limits. Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is not a better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms into the butterfly. And as if that's not difficult enough, it then has to struggle to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly. And so none of that is easy, but neither is busting through limits that society has placed upon you. And today, my guest, Wendy Anderson, never anticipated becoming a force to be reckoned with, as she told me in her bio, which I find absolutely awesome. And I'm excited for her to share with you what exactly that means, and for me and you to get to know her better. She is a master IEP coach like myself, but this is the first time we've ever met in person, so to speak. And so I really don't know her, and I'm happy to share her with you all. So Wendy, thank you for joining me today. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm absolutely excited. I love doing the show. I was just telling someone a few minutes ago how much I have learned. You are, it says at the bottom there, episode 86, and I have met some incredible people and heard the most amazing stories of busting through limits. And so I know that yours is going to be just as wonderful. And it's just, I'm so happy that there are so many stories to tell. Right. And I'm excited for you to be able to tell your story. So tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So my name is Wendy Anderson. I have three children. And I live in a very small town in Iowa that no one's ever heard of. So we just say we're kind of by Omaha, Nebraska.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, yeah. Through the pandemic, we have homeschooled all three children, and that's been incredible and part of our story. Our kind of story starts out, and you can direct me in a different way, is our firstborn son, Dexter, he was 6 months old when he was diagnosed with a rare genetic condition called tuberous sclerosis. So he had, at the time, non-cancerous tumors in his brain and his heart. The ones in his heart have dissolved. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen in the brain. And so he still has tumors in his brain, but they can happen anywhere throughout his body. That was diagnosed because he was having some seizures that we later learned were infantile spasms, but they're one of the most debilitating type of seizures out there. And then when he was 5 years old, he was diagnosed with autism. And so that's where you'll hear us say, like, in a matter of 36 hours, our seemingly normal life was turned completely upside down with this diagnosis over a weekend. So,
yeah. I bet.
Since then, yeah, we also have two more children. So our middle daughter is Phoebe, and she'll be 9 this summer. And that's a whole nother story. She was just within the last year recently diagnosed with severe dyslexia. And so that was a process for us. And then we have a daughter, Brexley, who is 6.
Their names.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, those are awesome names. Very unique. Are they family names at all? I'm just curious.
Dexter Hall, his middle name is my maiden name.
Okay.
Phoebe is like a third great grandmother's name, but she has my middle name.
Okay.
And then Brexley is a combination of my mother and my husband's mother's name. So Brexley Jean.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. My daughter's name is Violet, and she's Violet Claire. And Violet is after my husband's great aunt, but the great aunt was like a grandmother to him. And then the middle name is a combination of my grandmother and my great grandmother. One was Clara and one was Claire. So,
beautiful.
Yeah. So just combining the two. I love those unique names. And, like you said, the grandmother's name, the Phoebe, you know, kind of bringing some of those names, those older generation names back into present day. So yeah, hopefully she's not as ditzy as Phoebe was on Friends.
That she's not. Yeah.
Yeah. Although everybody loved Phoebe because she was quirky.
So. Right, right.
Yeah. So I forgot the business side of things. I tend to, because I get so excited that I want to talk to my guests. So if you are watching with us live, give us a hashtag live and let us know where you're from. And if you're watching in the replay, give us a hashtag live or hashtag replay and where you're from. And if you have any questions or comments, please be sure to leave them in the chat. And if it is on the replay, I will make sure that Wendy sees them and receives them and has a chance to answer if they are questions. So please, please be sure that you are leaving those comments. And the more kind of things that you chat and leave us, the more the algorithm picks this up and says, oh, the people are interested in this. I'm going to share it to somebody else. And so the more of that sort of stuff that you can do, the better for Wendy's story to be heard by as many people as possible. So tell us a little bit more about Dexter.
Yeah, Dexter, people ask me this question and my first react, I just smile. Like, I'm like, he's just such a sweet, loving kid. That, you know, when he was born, we had no idea, you know, for 6 months, he was just, you know, he was just a regular baby like any other babies. And so, and still just love him to pieces. He's 13 now. So we have a teenager in the house. And so that's been
have fun with that.
I know that's a journey in itself. We're learning. I'm also learning that 13 is like this magical age for services.
Really?
When all of a sudden they're like, oh, he's not a child anymore. And so we need to move up or we cancel these things or we don't do these things. So there's a lot of learning that as I'm moving into the young adult transitioning kind of age that we're learning a lot of things with that too. So,
yeah,
he was diagnosed with autism later in life, not till he was 5. Interesting tidbit is, individuals with tuberous sclerosis have a 50% chance that they will have autism. So it's a very high in the TS population. Yeah. A lot of autism studies are done with TS kits because there's such a high, percentage of individuals with it. And so, and he also did not present, you know, I say this like classically. So all of the things that are on the checklist, it wasn't necessarily him. So we as a family were not surprised to get an autism diagnosis as we were kind of anticipating it as we work with his doctors. So after he was diagnosed, we went and sought out some of the best in the world for his care. It's 1 in 6,000 individuals actually have a TS diagnosis. And so his primary doctors are in Cincinnati that we work with there to get the best care that we can for him and to help us out with all of these things. So,
So how much of a journey is that from your home to Cincinnati?
Yeah, it's about, I think it's like 14 hours if we were to drive.
Yeah. And
so sometimes we fly, sometimes we drive, make it like a little vacation. We've done the last 2 years with the pandemic. We've met with them virtually. We are going to go there again this year. So we're going to make it like a little vacation trip.
Okay.
And have fun. So, but they're incredible. That's part of what we really sought out to do was to create an amazing team for us and for Dexter ultimately. And so, our pediatricians, another neurologist here, his eye doctor, his dentist, like PT, OT, everybody, like we just have an incredible team. And that's really where we started out with this was like, we don't know everything. The internet can only teach us so much.
Right.
But that's where it's a great team. And when when he went into the school system, we're like, it's a team. And so that's really been an approach that we've taken with everything. And if someone's not on a fit on a team, not a fit on the team, it's fine. It's okay. But we're going to go find somebody else to replace you. And so
that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I want to touch on that just really quickly. I feel like I'm really close to my screen today. Sorry. <That's okay. laughs> So when you say if somebody's not a good fit on your team, are you talking within like the school team? Are you talking within the medical field? Are you talking about both? And if it's within the school team, how do you go about asking for someone to be replaced?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a both and. Like if you're on our team, you're on our team. One of the first questions that we always ask if we're sitting down to have an IEP meeting or meet with the schools or meet with the physicians, and they know that we're going to ask this question over and over and over, is what is the best thing for Dexter? Is this the best thing for Dexter? And so we have had, you know, he's in a great school system. There have been times where we have had individuals that just aren't a great fit for him. And we can tell that because he doesn't want to give them a time of day and he doesn't want to be around them, and or it's very contradictory to what we believe is best for our child and the services and things that we are. So it can be a challenge. And at the same time, I firmly believe that if someone's not a fit, like, don't keep trying to fit that round peg into a square hole, because it just creates tension and friction. And so we did at one point, like, I say this, like, I know how to play the game, right? Because it really is a game.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It's a game. It's a system. I know how to play the game. We've done A through Z, or we've done A through C, like, whatever it is, this just isn't working. And so there are times where I've had to go to the school administrator, you know, like the principal, or I'll go up to the special education director. I've gone to the State Department of Ed. I've gone to the area agency. So, like, whatever it is, where it's like, okay, this individual just is not working for my child. And let's, like, all acknowledge it, because we can all see it. Yeah. And so whether we need to switch teachers, whether it was a para, you know, just whatever wasn't working. And we just approach it from that place. And really, like, I send them my love. I don't think that you're a bad person. I don't think you're purposely trying to wrong my son. It's just not a right fit. And so the faster we can all acknowledge that and get into a right fit, the easier it's going to be for our child. And quite frankly, let's be real, for us as parents. Right. To get into a groove.
Right. Like,
let's not keep fighting something that's not working. Let's figure out a way to make it work.
That's so amazing. And I'm so thankful to hear that that is working. Mm-hmm. And that there are situations where people have been, you know, hey, this isn't working. And they have stepped aside and allowed someone else to come in, because mm-hmm. I don't typically hear that. Normally, you know, you and I both being master IEP coaches, both having our own businesses, you know, I get parents more often that are calling and saying, you know, my child's teacher and my child just do not mesh, but the school is absolutely refusing to mm-hmm. put them in a different classroom because, oh, we're 2 months into the school year, or, oh, we're, you know, well, there is that only that teacher is possible, you know, I mean, and right. where I am, and I'm thinking possibly where you are too, because you said you're in a very small town that no one's ever heard of. Mm-hmm. I have the same situation. Mm-hmm. We only have, in a lot of the schools in my area, one teacher per grade level. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. we don't have our families yeah. don't have the option of even an other teacher, let alone multiple other teachers.
Right. Well, and it's an interesting point and a unique one to us too. When my son was getting ready to enter kindergarten, I'm like, oh gosh, he's a seventh grader now. When he was getting ready to enter kindergarten, we went to the school in the town that we live in. And after a few meetings, we just knew it wasn't the right fit. And it was, you know, no fault. We could just tell it wasn't a right fit. So we actually open enrolled him into a school district that's 25 minutes away. They offered to, you know, I say like ship him to another school.
Right.
I just said transport. Thank you. That's the more correct word. So they offered to transport him to another school. And we're like, our son is five. We're going to take him to another school. So we did actually open enroll him into a larger school district just to have more options. And I know that's not an option that everybody has. And I have been in meetings with individuals where I, as an outsider, just had to say, okay, let's stop. Like, realistically, what are the options? Because us trying to stay on this path is not going to work. And we can all see that. And so really trying to create the possibilities. Anything is possible when we're all coming from a powerful place that's creative. And first and foremost, what is best for this child? And so when we pull everything else away, that's all that matters.
Yeah. And that's so awesome. And those are limits that are placed on a lot of IEP teams, is that this is as far as you can go.
Right.
And they hit that ceiling and they're not willing to peel back and say, okay, let's look at this from this angle, or mm-hmm. let's start back at ground zero, you know, and see what we can do.
Right. Right.
And I truly believe that it's the approach that you take mm-hmm. that has probably helped garner you some of these things, because yes. I think so often, and myself included, I get frustrated. Like, why mm-hmm. aren't you doing this? Why mm-hmm. don't you just know to do this? And mm-hmm. Me as a former special education teacher dealt with teachers that I was frustrated with on a regular basis. And so I have a harder time being nice with my approach. And it's an error. I'm like, okay, I have to remember that the teachers aren't trained right. in a lot of things. And especially when you're talking about something, you know, 1 in 6,000 people mm-hmm. That has TS, there's no way that all the teachers have the training that they would need to know to help him with what he needs.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think coming at it with the, look, you know, we want to be collaborative. We want to be helpful. We know that you love what you do, but we also know that not everybody fits with everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you know, for anybody who's watching, who might be having this, a similar struggle, you know, try that approach, but also I'll be giving you Wendy's website address in a little bit. So, you know, you can also reach out to Wendy and, you know, ask her for advice as well, because it sounds like, you know, he's pretty successful and you have a good team and have had a good team.
Mm-hmm.
So you definitely Correct. Have learned the right approach and the how to play the game, as you said.
Right, right. Well, and I honestly, you know, I'm in all the Facebook groups, right? And I see the posts. It's like, oh, I got my IEP meeting. I'm getting my armor on. And there's, in my head, I get it. And in my heart, like, I break for them. Because no one should have to be ready for a battle, you know, gear up, or any of those things. Like, we're talking about a child. Mm-hmm. And what's best for a child. And I truly believe that, like, no one's trying to wrong them. They're doing the best they can with the knowledge they have, and we can all grow in knowledge.
Right.
And so, like, let's do better. It's, you know, the pandemic has been very interesting on all kinds of fronts.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, in my family, my son's immune compromised. He's on a medication that's basically like a daily chemo to keep the tumors shrunk. And right. so we chose that when he was 3 years old, as opposed to having brain surgery. And 10 years later, like, we've avoided brain surgery, and that's what we wanted to avoid. We're like, if he ever has to have it, we want technology and research to catch up with where it is for the best possible outcomes.
Yeah.
And so he's immune compromised. So immediately, like, our family shut down. We have our house and grandpa's house. And, you know, we're slowly integrating back into society and things, but it was, you know, shortly after everything started, God bless them all. Like, we knew they're doing the best they could. The whole online schooling thing for the rest of that year was not going to work, mm-hmm. especially for us, with my son. And so, you know, we reached out and said, hey, we're going to get an online homeschool curriculum. We're taking it upon ourselves. We're going to keep this education thing. We know it's important and we want to keep going. And so we sought out, and I know the testing, right? Again, like, I am a former teacher. Many lives ago, I taught. I've been through the IEP coach training. Like, I'm on top of the data. I'm on top of this. Mm-hmm. And I was told, well, he's just below grade level. Well, when I said I need to purchase a curriculum and I need to know what grade, I was told about 4 grade levels below.
Oh, no.
So that brought up the conversation, like, your idea and my idea of just below grade level are very different.
Yes.
And so we took my son, we started him back in 2nd grade with math, reading, comprehension, all of those things, finished out that layer. Last year, it seems like it was many years ago. Like, we tried our hardest to do the virtual school thing, and it just, mm-hmm. it just was not working. And the teachers were trying their best, but it just was not for him either. And so again, then we dual enrolled. School district was fantastic in working with us. He has social skills times throughout the week. And he has a special education teacher that he works with one-on-one to do math and one-on-one to do reading comprehension. Virtually, wow. Online. So yeah, like we've been extremely blessed and we started him at the curriculum level where it is. And last year, cause we still do the school testing, he jumped 2 grade levels.
Oh, that's so amazing.
And we just got, so same thing again this year, he's not able to go into the school systems yet. And that's, I guess, the question, right? And so we just got his testing reports on comprehension in this last year with what we've been doing and having, you know, having the one-on-one special education teacher in reading comprehension alone, 196% growth in one wow. year.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible.
Yeah. And math, wow. I think was like 156% growth. I don't have the exact numbers on me because yeah. that was a few weeks ago, but it's like, you know, when we really teach a kid where they are, there's yeah. growth. And so although my child was in fifth grade, like he wasn't fifth grade material. And so, you know, this is my philosophy and it may conflict with others, but I'm like, let's not dummy down fifth grade material so he gets it. Let's teach him third grade material so he can grow. And so he's had massive growth in the last 2 years and he's almost at grade level with right. all of this growth. And so, I mean, that does have us questioning, like, what we're doing is working, right? And so it's, I don't know, we'll see what the next year brings and the pandemic numbers and all of that kind of thing. We also, so my daughter was in first grade, after kind of remember, and just struggling. I mean, we had a girl who was happy-go-lucky, loved to sing, loved life. Enjoyed learning, education, like all the things, right? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, she was like hiding in her bed and not wanting to get online and hated learning and didn't want to have anything about school. And she stopped singing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were working with the school. Something's going on. Children are reading. She's not quite reading yet, but if she can hear everything, right, she can answer the questions. She's a first grader, right? And so like, oh, at the time we were told we can't diagnose dyslexia until fourth or fifth grade. We weren't willing to wait 3 or 4 years to figure out what was going on with our child. The other thing was like, all children are struggling during the pandemic. I'm like, I get that, but this still isn't it. Unfortunately, the school districts in Iowa across the state does not, school psychologists cannot diagnose dyslexia. It's not like a recognized thing. It's just like another learning disability. So eventually we just went on our own, had an independent diagnosis done, paid for an independent diagnosis and found out that our daughter has severe dyslexia. And this is everything that we've been seeing is a product of that.
Right.
And so, you know, now we look back at the checklists and we can see, oh yeah, absolutely. But even I talk to my friends who are teachers and they're like, you know what, at the elementary level, they're like, we just don't know anything about dyslexia.
Right.
And it breaks my heart because yeah. how many children potentially could have dyslexia or other learning disabilities that just aren't getting recognized because all children are struggling right now.
Yeah. And it's such a shame that in Iowa and also in Illinois that you bring up the word dyslexia and the school goes, you know, and,
yeah.
and I think it's another one of those areas where the training for the teachers has been lax. Mm-hmm. And I mean, dyslexia has been around forever.
For years.
So, you know, I mean, the term and everything, and, mm-hmm. and yet people are scared of that. You know, right. they, and I'm not sure, but I think here in Illinois, it's the same as it is in Iowa, that a school psychologist cannot diagnose dyslexia. And so, mm-hmm. You know, and they don't even want to put that word
right
on mm-hmm. the IEP. Like, you know, it's a specific learning disability eligibility because of dyslexia. Like, they don't even want to do that.
No, they don't want to put the word on there because we went through the process.
Yeah. And you know, again, it's when you were talking about Dexter and the amount of growth he had, as a teacher myself, I'm thinking, yeah, that's because he had that one-on-one, that intense, direct, at his level for him instruction, mm-hmm. which is truly how special education is supposed to be administered.
Isn't
that's the intent when the law was put into place. And yet we are nowhere close to that. Mm-hmm. And it does. It breaks my heart too, because I was in a small district, as I said, where I live. You know, we have small districts. And mm-hmm. And so my caseloads, if I had 20, that was really high. But I know that there are people who have that times two,
right?
You know, and I there was a special ed teacher that I was talking to the other day, and she said she used to teach a high school math class, and there were 20 kids in her math class. Every kid had an IEP, and she was teaching them all the same curriculum. I'm like, that's right. Not special ed. She's like, I know, but that's
what she to do. She has no help.
Right. Exactly. And yeah. So we need to fix the system. And I really think the pandemic has brought that out and made that much yes. more obvious to everyone.
Yes.
And it's a shame mm-hmm. That it took something like that. And I'm hopeful, but hesitant, because I know how slow the wheels of education have always moved. Right. And mm-hmm. now with the pandemic, even though that we've all seen the flaws in the system, I think right. it's still going to be a long time before the things that really need to get addressed actually do get addressed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's a very industrial model. I mean, as much changes as they've had at it. Again, I've been in education. I have a sister who's been a counselor and an administrator. Her and I have amazing conversations. It's going to take a lot to overhaul the system. And that's really what needs to happen. I do believe that people are out there doing the best they can with the knowledge they have, but it's going to take some pretty massive shifts.
Yeah, it is. I agree with that.
Yeah.
And that's a shame, because, you know, Dexter's busting through all kinds of limits.
Yeah.
But it's not because of the school. It's almost in spite of the school.
Right. Yeah. And it's, you know, we share this story and it comes from a place of love. He couldn't be in a school system. If he could have, he would have been there. And we've learned at home, you know, my husband's a stay-at-home dad. And so it was the two of us doing the education, finding the right systems, you know, and my daughter, who here is, you know, she's a first grader who couldn't read. And right. we didn't know that. We discovered this because the online system that we were teaching her, that first year of homeschool curriculum, they actually got through two grade levels of material.
Oh,
and
wow.
when my daughter started to go into second grade material, even though she wasn't technically a second grader, right? We could just kept going on. It right. stopped reading to her. And once it stopped reading to her, she didn't want to do school anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because... And we're like, she knew that there was something wrong, but she didn't have the language to tell us. She couldn't right. say, I can't read. Right. So it was actually another master IEP coach. I saw her post on our Facebook page. Hey, I have a friend who's a researcher at the college level, and she's wants to do a study with kids that can't read between this age and this age. And I was like, sign me up. And so we were grateful enough to be able to get into that study. She started working with my daughter in September of last year. And by the end of February, so September to February, 15 minutes, 2 to 3 times a week,
mm-hmm.
15 minutes, 2 to 3 times a week, one-on-one instruction. By February, she's reading at grade level. She went from not being able to read to second grade level, 15 minutes, 3 times a week.
Yeah.
I'm like,
when you have the right tools,
right?
It's incredible.
Right. It's incredible. And since then, we've gotten, you know, dyslexia tutors for them that are working on the Barton method, because we're like, this is a lifelong thing. It's not just going to be throughout school. So right. we really, to really help her crack the code. And then we're working on the confidence, because that's the other thing, you know, like I say this lovingly, but my son, he's not aware of things he's not aware of. right? Sure. And so the confidence piece doesn't come into play as much. Well, my daughter, it does. Like, her confidence went way down. I say she stopped singing. She has a beautiful voice. So she's starting to sing more. So it's more of that too. It's that confidence piece. We went through the evaluation process because we know the games to play. And so we went through the evaluation process and again, love them to pieces. They're like, oh, you know, we'll put her into a reading group. We're going to start top to bottom, left to right. And I'm like, yeah, honestly, that's insulting to her.
Right.
She is a highly intelligent girl that has dyslexia that needs to learn how to decode the words, you know, even like, what curriculum are you using? Well, we just use this regular reading curriculum. It doesn't work for individuals with dyslexia. And so again, like, it's the school system trying to put a round peg into a square hole. It just doesn't work. And that's not what's best for the kids.
Right.
And so we've had to make some hard decisions as parents. And we've made them, and we're going to have to make some hard decisions going forward. And we're okay with that. But that is like challenging the status quo, like we talked about, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. And that, you know, again, that's that no limits, you know, my hashtag no limits. That's why this show is called this, because when we give kids the right tools, they can grow beyond what probably most of us even anticipate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we're so used to, because and I'm happy that there is a special education law, mm-hmm. but it's flawed, as any law is. I mean, you can't, you know, a big encompassing law like this, at least.
Right.
You know, the word appropriate, that's what it says. It's a free appropriate public education. It's not free best public education. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes I think the schools rely heavily on that appropriate because, again, there's such a broad definition of that.
Right.
And if the child is making even the tiniest little bit of progress, they're like, well, it's appropriate. They're making progress.
Right.
Maybe. Yeah. But when you know that you could go from this teeny tiny bit that you couldn't even see my hand move to this, don't you want this?
Yeah.
You know, I get that it costs money. I get that it, you know, costs training time and all that sort of stuff. But we need to get better about thinking long term, you know, in general, just as taxpayers. Because when we're not helping kids as much as they need it when they're younger, because of money, we're just pushing it off to another group.
Yeah. Well, they forget that they grow up to become adults.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then you get, oh, well, these adults don't know how to do anything. They don't know how to self-motivate. They don't know how to, you know, self-initiate. Right. Nobody taught them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
We just kept pushing them down the road. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I do meet parents like yourself who can and do have, and you take the opportunities to push back a little bit or to make those big changes, that the open enrollment, like, that's not even an option in my area.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, you know, every little town is its own school district and they will not accept students from neighboring school districts.
Yeah. We have a period where we can opt to open enroll. Now they can say no. Mm-hmm. And I do know the school districts right now are saying no to individuals who are on IEPs. We just happened to get in a time, you know, however many, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, right, when they were saying yes. So, but, and the money also follows them. So open enrollment is tied to money. Right. So they also get more funding, all of that kind of thing. But yeah, if it's not an option, it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you mentioned the Barton method, and I wrote that down when I looked down earlier. That's what I was doing, was writing that down. Uh-huh. So you're using that who's using that? You said the special ed teacher, that 15 minutes a week?
That's the dyslexia tutor. So the researcher that we got, she has her own method. She's designed her own method to teaching reading, and it is very effective, and I hope that it could become mainstream. So there are specific tutors. So Orton Gillingham is one of the approaches for individuals with dyslexia. It was like, I can navigate the autism world like crazy, no problem. But then you put me into the dyslexia world and I went back to like fish out of water trying to figure right. this out. And so I was starting all over again. So in the research and going to conferences, it was, they had recommended, you know, find a program that's an Orton-Gillingham. It's proven to have success. And so one of those was the Barton method. We actually bought the first three levels of it because parents are able to teach it. And then, I mean, we know how well our children want to learn specifically just from us. So,
yeah.
So we yeah. ended up hiring a tutor that she works with virtually twice a week, doing the Barton specific method that really teaches individuals with dyslexia how to decode, how to decode what they're seeing, what they're going through for reading and writing. And yeah. so it's been going really well.
That's so incredible. And so for anybody who is just tuning in, Wendy has shared with us that she has three children, Dexter, Phoebe, and Brexley, and that Dexter has autism, Phoebe has dyslexia, and we haven't gotten to Brexley yet. but she has been talking on how, you know, the different ways that she has been able to help both of her children so far that we've spoken about bust through limits of, you know, having the stigma of autism and having the social issues of, you know, now being able to be out in, and well, not be out because of the pandemic, but but yeah, you know, get that help, be back up almost to grade level. And then as well for your daughter with the dyslexia and finding the Orton-Gillingham and the Barton method. So I want to keep talking about the two of them because we still have a little bit of time, but, and I don't know how long Brexley's story is, or if there is a story to tell so much there, but with Dexter and Phoebe, so you've been homeschooling them, but you have, and this is something too, depending upon your state, homeschools are recognized as schools in some states. And so you can co-enroll or duo enroll, I think is what dual enroll is.
Dual enroll.
With the public schools so that you can still get some services. Mm-hmm. And so that, I know that's what you said you were doing with Dexter. Now you're not doing that with Phoebe because you have this outside tutor, or are you doing some stuff?
Yeah. So the girls are technically dual enrolled. We kept them dual enrolled for extracurricular activities in case we needed something. And it did come up, you know, in the process of her dyslexia diagnosis. We did go through the testing process. She did qualify for an IEP. We went through that with the school system. And then based upon the fact with just a very limited knowledge of dyslexia, it's, you know, she was going to be worked with like any other learning disability. And we just knew in our hearts and in our gut, we could just feel it that this wasn't the right thing. So we did decline services. And that's when we went out and sought the outside tutors for her. Unfortunately, it is out of our pocket. You know, we inquired, and in order for the school system to have to pay for it, she's going to have to fail three or four other different things. And as a parent, we aren't willing, when we know, we aren't willing to let her fail that many times, because right. quite frankly, it's the knock on her self-confidence is what the challenge is, and the mental health. Yes. And so, so we did decline services with them. So she does not have any, she does not work with anybody within the school system. If we need them, you know, for anything, we have that available. Yeah. And our, Brexley, our youngest she's a kindergartner. And so, she hasn't had the school experience, and so she thinks that she wants it, and that's fine at some point. She does not have any diagnosed disabilities, learning disabilities, although I'm known to text my friend who is a kindergarten teacher and be like, do all kindergartners do two-digit math in their heads? She's like, no. I'm like, okay, just checking. So, so, you know, she has her own unique abilities too. And so it's been really fun, just to experience life with them. And they're all three such amazing kids with just their own unique abilities. And It's like they all came from the same two people, really? It's like, wow. But yeah, so it's a lot of fun and unique. And, you know, we're starting the conversations and opening it up to us, really due to the confidence knock that has happened with our daughter. She does not want to go into a public school system or a school system at all. And so we're in consideration of really what does schooling look like for our children going forward? We happen to enjoy homeschooling. I know some people are like, no way, I could never do that. And so you just have to look at what works for each of you. We're able to do it and mesh our work and our businesses together. And so it works for our family. Will we continue to do it going forward? Like, we'll just be curious about it because we really... I want our kids to have a love for learning and enjoy learning. And, unfortunately, sometimes as they get older, like that interest, that excitement, kind of gets pushed out of them because of an industrial system. Right. And so it's like, what can we do as parents? What resources can we find? There are some other kind of, little more private schools that we might look into and different things. We know that not everything is going to be a fit for our son, and that's okay. And so it's just really customizing what is going to work for him for the best.
Yeah. And that's so important that what you just said about, you know that not everything is the right fit for him and what's mm-hmm. best for him, and understanding that and recognizing that and honoring that to be real.
Right,
You know, a lot of times I hear things like, well, it's not the best, but it's all we can do. And I understand that statement.
I get it. Right. 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, I would never tell someone, oh, well, come on, you can do better than that. You know,
right. I mean, right. Everybody's doing the best they can.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I've just popped up your website here. And so tell us about what you do, why you have this website, and how you became that force to be reckoned with, as I mentioned, and you mentioned in your bio.
Yeah, thank you. So Wendy Anderson Presents and really is, we call it redefining normal. I love to speak. I love to train. I love to be an advocate. And so it's really me going out there, speaking to parents, speaking to school systems. I'm in the process of really working to get in to speak into more governmental agencies and things where we can really create the change. And so getting out there speaking, doing trainings and teaching individuals about disabilities. So people will say, well, are you in the autism world? I'm like, for me, it's about everything. And whether you call it disabilities, special needs, abilities, like it's all encompassing wherever we are. But I do truly believe that there needs to be more awareness and there needs to be more acceptance. I know that can be kind of controversial in the world too, but I'm like, if people don't know more, how can they do better?
Right.
And so if I can get out there, talk to the parents about redefining normal, it all started because that was our journey. Like we redefined normal because when you have a child diagnosed with a rare genetic disorder, like there aren't many boxes that you fit into.
Right.
And so that was it. So we really came into like redefining normal for us, and our family is normal. And mm-hmm. you know, quite frankly, I love to say like, what is normal anyways? It's just right? something on the washing machine.
Yeah.
But like our family is normal. Our son has taken pills, 36 pills a day since he was 4 years old. He hated taking the liquid. So at four, we taught him to take pills. You know, the ambulance has been to our house and friends have had to come take care of our daughters, you know? So it's like normal is whatever your family is, and just accepting that, and things just kind of relax and it's a little bit easier. When you stop living by those societal pressures so much. And so it's like, yeah, we go out and see different things, and you know, if my son can make it, like, he makes it. If he doesn't, we leave. We went out and tried. So we also started a nonprofit called Dexter's Dream Foundation, where we organize and create events for families of individuals with disabilities. And it doesn't matter what the disability or the special needs is, but pre-pandemic, we were having a bowling league. We would have movies. Since then, we found some outdoor stuff to do. We're renting the splash pad at our zoo. We have an incredible zoo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we have a pumpkin patch day. We've done like fun kits for families. And so we do all that through the nonprofit. And then I'm also working with three other incredible women. We're creating an amazing complex that's going to have a splash pad. It's going to have a memorial trailhead and trail system for a young individual who was actually killed running on the streets in our town a few years ago. So his mom has teamed in with us. We are going to have an all-inclusive barrier-free playground that's going to like be so incredible. We're going to have an adult changing table because I'm like, I want everybody to be able to come and utilize this. And we also are adding a miracle field to it. So it's going to be about a 2-acre complex. And yes, in this town of 1,000 people. So we are in the process of fundraising for that and getting the money for that. And that'll be incredible. So we got a lot of stuff going on and it's all super exciting.
And I did not realize that you were a fellow author as well. So this is very cool.
Yes.
Redefining Normal, the Kindle book. So you can see here that it's available through Amazon. And I just found that on her website as I was just scrolling around, looking at different things. I didn't realize that it had gone to a funny screen until I popped back over and saw that it, I'm not sure why that happened. I apologize for that. But yeah, so that's available through Amazon. And then yeah, through her website, there's lots of things going on. Now I didn't see anything about the foundation on that website. Do you have it on there? Did I miss it? Or is it a separate site?
It's dextersdreamfoundation.org. Actually, hopefully my website gal right now is in the process. We're in the process of upgrading that website.
Okay. So I won't look for it.
Yeah. So Dexter's Dream Foundation and Wendy Anderson Presents will be connected soon. And so yes, exciting things. We have, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in this brain and then we're just working out timetables to make everything happen. Just more ways that we can help families because we get it. Our lives can be really challenging. And at the same time, there's so many ways that we can support each other and empower each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I had no idea that all that other stuff was going on in your life. I do have a question for you, though. You said you were talking about having a miracle field. What is that?
So a miracle field is, the other word for them is like all play fields. So it is like a rubberized surface. So it takes the barrier of the grass and the dirt and all of that. There's a whole league of miracle leagues. There is one in Omaha that my son participates in. And yeah. And so like our goal with this is we want to be able to, we'll have bocce ball courts. Like we want to be able to have Special Olympics events out here. We want to be able to have wheelchair events and games and literally no barriers. Like anything that we can possibly think of, from the fact that we're having some metal slides, so we don't have all plastic slides for individuals with cochlear implants to not get the shock in their ears. Like we are trying to think of as many possible things that we can just to eliminate all the barriers. Everything will be fenced in. Our trail system is actually going to have along the outside of the trail, it's going to be a glow in the dark material. So our trail will be lined glow in the dark. On one side of it, we'll also have kind of like a, not a rope, but like a rope material. So if individual might be blind or low sight, they can actually follow the trail around by holding on to that. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That is amazing. That is so cool. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Doing all of that. That sounds very similar on a smaller scale, but very similar to what's happening in the St. Louis, Missouri area. There is a push to build a all-inclusive theme park. And it's called Spirit of Discovery Park. And it once it gets going, it will be only the second one in the world. The first one is Megan's Wonderland.
Morgan's.
Morgan's.
I want to go there. Yeah.
Well, hopefully this one in St. Louis will be up soon, and that'll be closer because it's being based similarly to that one in San Antonio, but I mean different things because in the Midwest we have different weather conditions we have to tend with than they have to and down in San Antonio. So I actually had the person who has founded this, Jamie Van, she was on hashtag No Limits last year sometime and was talking about it. And it's called Spirited Discovery Park, and they have a website up already. But that's like, I think they have 40 acres purchase. So it's a little bit bigger than what you're doing. But what you're doing is very similar as far as thinking about all of the different individuals who could use it and how they could use it and how they can access it. Mm-hmm. And Jamie, on the large scale version, I've come to become she and I are good friends now. And it's just been amazing all the things and it sounds like you're doing the same thing, thinking about all those, okay, well, if somebody with this comes out, we want them to be able to participate. So what do they need in order to be able to participate? And the education piece that you mentioned earlier is one of the reasons that I do this show, but it's also, it's so important because people still don't understand the limitations, even for that sort of a thing, getting somewhere in your wheelchair, the ground is a barrier.
It's a barrier. Absolutely.
You know,
even for my son, like he's mobile, he walks, but he is weaker.
Right.
And so having thick grass or the tires or the gravel, it just poses a challenge. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
That's why I said I've loved doing this show because I have learned about all these great things that are happening all across the country and actually around the world. I've had a few people from overseas. I've had a few from Australia and a few from England. And I think those are the only two countries where I've interviewed people, but I know people watch in other countries as well. Right. And the companies and the job opportunities that are popping up all over the place, and I'm sure with your place and at Spirit of Discovery Park, that's one of Jamie's things is we want to hire people with disabilities because their jobless rate is like 3 times or something. Just getting the information out there to people about what everyone's abilities are. Mm-hmm. Take the dis off of it and focus on the ability of every person and how that person is able to contribute in whatever is their way to do it.
Whatever. Yeah, absolutely. Amen, sister.
Well, if you want to continue to talk, we still have a few minutes. So I want to make sure, as I always try to do, that anything that you thought you wanted to say or that you definitely wanted to get out in regards to the limits that your children have busted through, the things that you have busted through, any words of encouragement, any sort of thing. This is like the wrap up. We've got some time. So you can go ahead and say it now.
Yeah. Well, my number one is always redefine normal. and really, quite frankly, define what it is. It's this thing that no one really knows how to define.
Right.
The other thing that we talk a lot about and that I share is I like to say set the intention and release the expectation. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. Set the intention, release the expectation. So whether it's you're going to go to an event, I'm going to set the intention that we're going to my niece's wedding and then release the expectation of what that actually looks like. When Dexter, I think he was like 3 or 4, maybe a little bit older. I can't remember. My niece got married. And of course we're going, right? And what that exactly looks like is we made it through the wedding. He took a nap during the wedding after my other niece carried him down the aisle as the ring bearer.
Aww.
And then he fell asleep. And then we, stood outside the reception playing sidewalk chalk because we always take sidewalk chalk and balls wherever we go because the music was too loud. Like, right. And it was completely fine. We all had a good time and we got to enjoy it. So many times I hear families like, oh, we would never go do that. I'm like, go try it, but just release the expectation of what it actually looks like. I had so many tears go through my eyes when we were able to do the movies. And one girl's, her care provider brought her to a movie because she had never been to a movie before. And just to sit there and watch this little girl, I can't remember. It was like, maybe it was like, I think it was Frozen 2. Okay. And so this little girl to be sitting, she was in a wheelchair, to be sitting there just watching Frozen 2 for the first time. And she was like engaged and enthralled and so excited throughout the whole thing. Like that brought tears to my eyes that we were able to provide a safe environment for her to experience that. And it's like, go experience things. I think we actually, it was like 4 or 5 movies that we went to before my son actually like stayed for the whole things. And that was because it was Angry Birds and he loves Angry Birds, you know, or yeah. Like we'll go to a park or we'll go, you know, we'll go, just go try things. And you might have to try them numerous times. And there have been times where my husband and I get in the car and we're like, well, yeah, that didn't go very well.
Yeah, stretch that off. That doesn't work.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, so if it's something that we really want to do as a family, okay, what should we try next time? Okay, well, let's actually bring headphones and maybe bring a stuffy or a squishy or something for him to have. You know, so it's like, just be creative, be open and curious. And that things are going to go exactly the way they go. And it's not always the way we planned. And that's okay. Like, it's not a failure. You're doing the best you can. Quite frankly, our children are doing the best they can. Yeah. And so just keep experiencing life in the best that you can. Like, we've had to get really creative experiencing life these last 2 with a child that's immune compromised. And we still do. I know that a lot of people like are like, oh, COVID's over kind of thing. Well, when you have someone who's immune compromised, it's not so much over.
Right.
And, yeah. You know, we have to think about these things. So, but yeah, just keep experiencing life. If it's the school system or the medical system, like we talked about at the beginning, it really is like, is this what's best for my child? And I asked that question over and over. And there have been times where I would say, if he was your child, would you be saying the same thing?
It's a good question.
And, you know, they have to stop and think. And that's really what we want people to do is like, I want you to have to think about your answers to me and right. Not just, this isn't just something that you tell every child that walks in your door.
Right.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. So many good nuggets here.
It does truly make a difference when it is their own child. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's a shame that our human nature is that way, that, you know, mm-hmm. So many people don't change their way of thinking until they have, till they're forced to.
Right.
Because yeah. Now they're in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But I love that. Set the intention, release the expectation. Yeah. That is incredible. And yeah. Absolutely. You know, talking about that, I was discussing with a client earlier, they had to take their child to a funeral. And I said, you know, you've got to talk ahead of time. Like, okay, this is what it's going to be like. And this is what might happen. And, you know, this is how we respond. And I said, and don't tell them, don't do this. Don't do this. Tell them right. Exactly what you want them to do.
To do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 10,000%.
Yeah. And go from there. Well, thank you. So, for being my guest today. I have so much enjoyed getting to know you and learning about your family and all the fantastic things that you were doing. I truly had zero idea of all of that stuff. Hopefully you guys have been watching the scroll down at the bottom. Next week is on Tuesday, but it's at 11:30 instead of 1 o'clock. So that's a different time. And then the following week is on a different day, but at the same time. Next week is with Stephanie DeLessi, Mrs. D's Corner, and the following week is on Monday, which is actually Memorial Day. So I know a lot of people are going to be, you know, having picnics and enjoying the day off. But stop at 1 o'clock and join me because I will be interviewing Temple Grandin. And for anybody who is familiar with autism, you've probably heard that name. And anybody who actually is in the farming business and has to do with cattle, you're likely to have heard her name as well. So this will be your opportunity. She doesn't do many live one-on-one interviews, so you can ask her questions. She will be able to answer the burning question that you've always wanted to know from Temple Grandin. So be sure to tune in Monday, May 30th at 1 o'clock to see Temple, and Tuesday, 11:30, May 24th with Stephanie DeLessie. Again, Wendy, thank you so much. And anybody who's watching, make sure you leave us a hashtag replay and any comments, and I will be sure to get them to Wendy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.